Okay, reading from the Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 4, Chapter 8, Text 36. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Tathi me venitasya kshatram goram upeyasha. Sucha durbacho bana nabine shayate hadi. My dear Lord, I am very impotent for not accepting your instructions, but this is not my fault. It is due to having been born in a Kshatriya family. My stepmother, Saruchi, has pierced my heart with harsh words. Therefore, your valuable instructions do not stand. Om Gyanati Marandasya Gananjana Shalakaya Saksur Unmutam Yena Tasmai Sri Gurudeva Namaha Sri Chaitanya Manovistam Satitam Yena Bhutale Sayam Rupa Kadamayam Dadati Sapadantitam Panchakalpa Turubhyascha Kripa Sindhu Bhayevacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namah Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadha Srivasade Gaur Bhaktavinda Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. So, greetings from New Jersey. I'm at my mother's house because I did a program yesterday in the Jagannath Mandir. That's the place of Gopi Kishore and Jai Sri Radhe. And it's such a wonderful place to do programs. And then I kind of came back to my mother's house, and last week I was here also for similar reasons, and it just somehow disorients me. I lose sight of the day of the week, and I hope this doesn't happen again, but thank you for your patience in waiting. I see, you know, even to memory and to focus, you know, how important stability is and regulation is. Of course, a sannyasi, you know, ideally, you know, a sannyasi doesn't organize the external environment. He just, that's his thing. He just travels and preaches and, you know, walks through the forest and experiences God's creation. And he allows, Prabhupada said, even the material protective coverings, he allows, he diminishes his control to such an extent that he is forced to seek Krishna's control and therefore feel Krishna's mercy. Because you put yourself in situations where you don't make any external arrangements, then whatever arrangements come, it comes by God's mercy. And you see it as God's mercy. And therefore, for sannyasi, that would help them in their own spiritual life, both in Dhyan and in bhakti. But of course, you know, Prabhupada said, you know, the modern day sannyasis, we can't be like that. And, you know, because the reason you take sannyas in the modern age is for preaching, and preaching means organization, and preaching means leadership, and so many things. But I just see myself when the external situations become unstable. like right now, I'm working on an apartment in New York, and it's on and it's off, and every time it switches, my schedule switches, and it was delayed again. Whether it'll happen, I don't know. And you know, it switched my whole orientation of what my schedule is. I have to switch my schedule around now. I was going to stay in New York City, I'll go upstate, when, et cetera. And I don't know, it seems when that happens, the whole orientation of what day of the week it is. Anyway, that's a poor excuse. I'll try to do better, but I'm just reflecting on it. And I think one of my services is to, you know, study Shastra and see the world according to Shastra. And then to write about it and speak about it. But it's something I'm kind of recognizing. You know, stability and what facility it gives for what person in what order of life or in what situation of service. I often speak about stability. And how a modern society, a traditional society, one of the main purposes of a traditional society was to provide that stability so people could focus on spiritual life. And I guess for a sannyasi, it's removing that stability so he can focus on spiritual life on the level of realization that they're at, which one works towards. One man's food is another man's poison. But I guess I'm talking about this tatastha sannyas, marginal sannyas, where you know, you're working on that dependence on Krishna and at the same time requiring stability for your service. So it's just an interesting kind of phenomenon to me. And this is a very interesting story, Dhruva Maharaj, and I'm kind of relishing it a lot. And I do like this point, too, that we come to the point where he's getting instructions, but they're not suitable for his adhikari. They're not suitable for his adhikari. And it appears that, you know, it's kind of if I can find that point, there was one thing that was very revelatory about why Narada was doing this. But I forgot there was one point that he said, in my opinion, you know, which indicated wasn't absolute or something. I forgot. But the point is, it's very interesting that he can't follow. It's not suitable for him. So there's not just truth, but there's application of truth. There's not just Shastra, this application of Shastra. That's why realization is so important. And experience is so important. Because the application of the Shastra means to take the principle and apply it in a situation in which the original, you know, and apply it in a another context. And when something's in another context, it has a different language. So you have to see it in another context. You're not the body, is an instruction. But now here's another context where a person is not able to transcend that conception. And to what extent is it imposed? It's actually a very, very relevant topic in relationship to a very relevant topic in relationship to Srila Prabhupada, his instructions. and how to know details and how to know principles, how to know. It's a very, very relevant instruction. Because Prabhupada very clearly outlines instructions and speaks them very forcibly, and which are contextual and which are not, or when they are not contextual. It's a very, very, you know, subtle point. And when you're out in the world advising people, it's a very important. In fact, I wrote that book review called Moral Diversity, Book Banning, and the Liberal Social Polemic at ISKCON, trying to, you know, analyze Srila Bhakti Vikas Swami's book, Women, Mothers, or Masters, where Prabhupada had very, very clear directions for the role of women in society, which I very, very strongly support. On one level, I strongly support it. You know, the role of mother in society and how the need for equality should not minimize that role in a modern society, the role of mother in society. But at the same time, the change in society necessitating a practical application of it. And so it's a very, very interesting subject. And here, you know, Dhruva just saying that the instruction is great. You're not the body. And what I should do based on that, ideally. But here is who I am, who is not able to transcend that. Is there a place in spiritual life for me? And of course, the moral of the story is yes. Yes. There is a place in spiritual life. That there is a and that's why the Vedas are so vast, because they're accommodating all types of people, even provisions for what do you do for people who are mediators, you know, in that context. So it's a very, very interesting subject matter. And it's wonderful to engage with the Bhagavatam and to see how many really incredibly nuanced points are there within a philosophical tradition that's very stable, traditional also. One second. So, anyway, that's my inspiration, and the need, therefore, is so much with people with realization. And realization takes experience. And experience takes age. That's why when years ago we met at Gitanagari, and there was this dynamic that women were feeling disempowered, but in the same sense, our society is mixed with people who are from India, who have a very, you know, set social roles, which work. It worked for them, and everybody was making their comments, and then Jayadwaita Swami said, you know, the problem is this son needs grandmothers. And I thought it was such a relevant comment. You know, they're not people who are were experienced and therefore had realization of the application of the principles. A great weakness in an alternative society where people are generally uprooted from their traditions and families, and then there is no tradition, there is no elders. I know some people describe the beginning of ISKCON as like the Lord of the Flies, which is another book that I kind of like. The Lord of the Flies. It is an island where just young people are. There's an island where just young people are stranded, and they, you know, and what happens? You know, one of the, you know, they have to have, you know, they have to have a hierarchical structure. So people who are immature take that structure, and you see the disaster that happens. Prabhupada also indicated that when he saw, you know, there was a picture that was in Prabhupada's room. I think at the time he was there, and then it was removed somehow. And it was right by his bed, and it was Prabhupada sitting on, you know, like on, you know, these some kind of stairs. I forgot, you know, where. Anyway, it was Prabhupada with about 30 or 40 sannyasis. And then, you know, you look at the picture when I saw it in the early 80s. No one was left. I guess some people removed it out of embarrassment. Prabhupada said, the only mistake I made, people criticized me, my God brothers, but one thing they said was right, that I gave sannyas too prematurely. And then Prabhupada said, what can I do? And he quoted a Bengali saying, when there are no trees in the forest, the poplar or castor oil tree looks big. I remember Rabindra Saruprabhu made some very, very astute observation. Very, very astute observation on ISKCON. And he said the problem with ISKCON, he's talking about the beginning days, is that Prabhupada was the only adult. So, anyway, I'm mentioning this because it really brings up the necessity to know truth, realize truth, and apply truth, which generally is a skill. You know, we say someone is mature beyond his age, but it's a fact. There's just so much that comes with life experience. You know, and it's not just, you know, someone is older, but life experience, whoever one is, you know, as they get some more realizations and some maturity. Of course, growing up in the 60s, we didn't believe that any adult had any experience. And there was truth to it in some ways. Okay, so let's see what Prabhupada says about this point. It's said that the heart or mind is just like an earthen pot. Once broken, it cannot be repaired by any means. Wow, this is heavy. The fact, we have to be very, very careful how we deal with people. But sometimes when people are hurt, it creates a samskara, it creates an impression that's not removed so easily. This is what's happening with Dhruva in another way. He has these kshatriya samskaras that are implanted in him
because it is his nature being born in that type of family. And there's a certain passion and pride which one is not taught to transcend completely, but to use it. Because as Prabhupada said in the previous purport, if I could find it, we talked about, you know, the duties of a kshatriya and how they were trained in, you know, valor and pride and these things. So that, you know, so there's a certain pride for battle, a certain spirit. So he had that spirit, and then he was insulted. And the combination of the two, it's something that he could not transcend. Until he tells someone to forgive, please forgive. But sometimes it's very difficult. Because something's been shattered, something's been broken, or it takes a great effort and a great encouragement and great courage to overcome. Dhruva Maharaj gave this example to Narada Muni. He said that his heart, having been pierced by the arrows of his stepmother's harsh words, felt so broken that nothing seemed valuable but his desire to counteract her insult. It was so heavy. He was young. And it was a relationship with his father. And he's denied the shelter of his father. And put down in a way. And he was driven by it. His stepmother had said that because he was born from the womb of Suniti, a neglected queen of Maharaj Uttanapad, Dhruva Maharaj was not fit to either sit on the throne of his father's lap. In other words, according to his stepmother, he could not be declared king. Dhruva Maharaj's determination, therefore, was to become king of a planet exalted even beyond that possessed by Lord Brahma, the greatest of all the demigods. Dhruva Maharaj indirectly informed the great sage Narada that there are four kinds of human spirit: the Brahminical spirit, the Kshatriya spirit, the Vaishya spirit, and the Sudra spirit. The spirit of one caste is not applicable to the member of another. We see that sometimes. It may not even have to do with a person's level of devotion. Absolutely. Because there's some correlation for sure. But one person, it's hard. It's more difficult to being challenged. And I think, you know, to one extent or another, we can all see sometimes being challenged by our spirit. Being challenged by our spirit when we're trying to do something Krishna conscious and, you know, we know we should forget or forgive or accept Krishna's will. See, a Brahmin is completely detached. A Brahmin is completely detached. A Kshatriya, or a Brahmin is completely dependent on Krishna. That's to be a Brahmin, one should be completely dependent on Krishna. He has that philosophical acumen, that particular mode. And a Kshatriya, he may be exalted Vaishnava, but he's a little bit, his nature his nature requires some territory to control. He has to have some territory to control. He cannot, it's very hard for that person to be peaceful. Without some territory, and I mentioned this before, I was told this by a learned Vaishnava in India, that a Vaishya, he needs to cheat. Profit means cheating. Because the cheating is, you know, you're trying to tell people you're not making part of the business. Advertising, the whole thing. It's a nature. You can't be secure unless you cheat. It's allowed cheating. It's not illegal cheating, but you can see. Someone tries to sell you something. They try to convince you it's more than it is. And a sudra, another spirit, he just needs a master. It can't be secure. They'll have to get some job, work for some other person. The philosophical spirit enunciated by Narada Muni might have been suitable for a Brahmin spirit, but is not suitable for a Kshatriya. Dhruva frankly admitted that he was lacking in Brahminical humility and was therefore unable to accept the philosophy of Narada Muni. The statements of Dhruva Maharaj indicate that unless a child is trained according to his tendency, there is no possibility of developing his particular spirit. So you need the spirit. So Dhruva has been trained in that spirit. It is the duty of the spiritual master or teacher to observe the psychological movements of a particular boy and thus train him in a particular occupational duty. So many people, they still, they're in their 30s and 40s, they still are not sure who they are. And this is separate from your level of devotion. Some of the most advanced spiritual people I know, Vaishnavas, they have a managerial spirit. And they're very learned, and they're always absorbed, and they're completely surrendered to Krishna. And some of them may have more of a Brahminical spirit, but less surrendered to Krishna. Dhruva Maharaj, having already been trained in the Kshatriya spirit, would not accept the Brahminical philosophy. Now, what comes up too is really, you see Prabhupada's vision now. He's going to comment on his vision of what he's seeing in America. It's beautiful when Prabhupada shows you what he's thinking. That would maybe be interesting, someone go through Prabhupada's books and can see where Prabhupada's actually is, what Prabhupada's vision is, what Prabhupada's actually seeing. In America, we have practical experience of this incompatibility of the Brahminical and Kshatriya temperaments. The American boys who have simply been trained as sutras are not at all fit to fight in battle. Therefore, when they are called to join the military, they refuse because they do not have the Kshatriya spirit. It is a cause of great dissatisfaction in society. That the boys do not have the Kshatriya spirit does not mean that they are trained in Brahminical qualities. They are trained as sutras, and thus in frustration, they are becoming hippies. Interesting. Yeah, you know, Kshatriya is happier. Those warriors who battles come unsought. That the boys do not have the Kshatriya spirit does not mean that they are trained. Okay. However, as soon as they enter the Krishna consciousness movement, being started in America, they are trained to meet the Brahminical qualifications, even though they have fallen to the lowest condition of sutras. Well, this is a little bit interesting because it says that you can't be trained. First, it seems a contradiction because initially Prabhupada's saying you can't be trained for another spirit. And here he is, he's saying he's training people for another spirit. I think what Prabhupada is expressing is the power of Krishna consciousness to help people transcend to a certain degree, but more than help people transcend, to purify people so they can actually find their real spirit. In other words, since the Krishna conscious movement open to everyone, people in general can attain the Brahminical qualifications. This is the greatest need at the present moment. For now, there are actually no Brahmins or Kshatriyas, but only some Vaishyas and for the most part Sudras. So that's America. Kalo Shudra Sambrava, everyone who's born a Sudra may be some Vaishyas. And Prabhupada saw that the greatest need to society, I remember he wrote one letter about the Gurukul, honest Brahmin Brahmacharis, that's what we want, but no one wants. Prabhupada saw that so much the heads of society were needed. The heads of society we needed. He saw so much. The classification of society into Brahmin, Kshatriyas, Vaishyas, and Sudras is very scientific. In the human social body, the Brahmins are considered the head, the Kshatriyas are the arms, the Vaishyas are the bellies, and the Sudras are the legs. At the present moment, the body has legs and a belly, but there are no arms or head, and therefore society is topsy-turvy. You see this sometimes in ISKCON in a temple. They don't have the Brahminical class in there, so people are not nourished spiritually, and they don't have good management. And then it just becomes, at best, a money-making thing. Sometimes you see that. There are exemplary places also. But too often you see that. It is necessary to reestablish the Brahminical qualifications in order to raise the fallen human society to the highest standard of spiritual consciousness. Prabhupada's mission. I'll read another purport today because I started late. Padam Chibhuvano Krishnam Jigisho Saruvartname Vyasmat Pratiti Brahman Anya Apyana Dishtatam. O learned Brahman, I want to occupy a position more exalted than any yet achieved within the three worlds by anyone, even by my father and grandfather. If you will oblige, kindly advise me of an honest path to follow by which I can achieve the goal of my life. Purport. Dhruva Maharaj refused to accept the Brahminical instruction of Narada Muni. Naturally, the next question would be what sort of instruction he wanted. So even before Narada Muni asked, Dhruva Maharaj expressed his heartfelt desire. His father, of course, was the emperor of the entire world, and his grandfather, Lord Brahma, was the creator of the universe. Dhruva Maharaj expressed his desire to possess a kingdom better than those of his father and grandfather. He frankly stated that he wanted a kingdom which had no competitor within the three worlds, namely the higher, middle, and lower planetary systems. The greatest personality within this universe is Lord Brahma. And Dhruva Maharaj wanted a position even greater than his. He wanted to take advantage of Narada Muni's presence because he knew very well that if Narada Muni, the greatest devotee of Lord Krishna, can bless him or show him the path, then certainly he would be able to occupy a more exalted position than any person within the three worlds. Thus he wanted help from Narada to achieve that position. Dhruva Maharaj wanted a position greater than that of Brahma. This was practically an impossible proposition, but by pleasing the Supreme Personality of Godhead, a devotee can achieve even the impossible. This is kind of a minor theme. Okay, you want something, and you can't get it, and it's not possible, then take shelter of God. Really take shelter of God. That means surrendering. So it's interesting. You're really surrendering. You're really taking shelter of God. But in the back of your mind, you have this desire. And you feel, well, and I see that sometimes with people. They just can't get what they need. And take full shelter of God. And you'll be protected. If you really take full shelter of God, he will always provide your need also. Of course, Dhruva's need is it's a need, but his need is so amazing. It's his need. It's his legitimate need. He's so disturbed. That's what he needs. One particular point mentioned here is that Dhruva wanted to occupy an exalted position, not by hook or by crook, but by honest means. This indicates that if Krishna offered him the position, then he would accept it. That is the nature of a devotee. But he may desire material gain, but he accepts it only if Krishna offers it. Dhruva Maharaj was sorry to refuse the instructions of Narada. Therefore, he requested to be merciful to him by showing him a path by which he could fulfill his desires. I'm going to read another verse. Inam bhavam bhagavato yam garja paramishtitna tu dana tete dinam itayai jagato prafit. My Lord, you are worthy son of Lord Brahma, and you travel playing on your musical instrument, Divina, for the welfare of the entire universe. You are like the sun which rotates in the universe for the benefit of all living beings. So it's a nice glorification, like the sun, which moves. Or rotates for the benefit. So the purport, Dhruva Maharaj, although a young child, expressed his hope that he might be offered his benediction of a kingdom which should exceed in opulence those of his father and grandfather. He also expressed his gladness that he had met such an exalted person as Narada, whose only concern was to illuminate the world like the sun, which rotates all over the universe, only for the purpose of benefiting the inhabitants of all planets. Narada Muni traveled all over the universe for the sole purpose of performing the best welfare activity in the entire universe by teaching everyone how to become a devotee of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. This Dhruva Maharaj felt fully assured that Narada could fulfill his desire, even though his desire was extraordinary. The example of the sun is very significant. The sun is so kind that he distributes his sunshine everywhere without consideration. Dhruva Maharaj requested Narada to be merciful to him. He pointed out that Narada travels all over the universe just for the purpose of doing good to all conditioned souls. He requested that Narada show his mercy by awarding him the benefit of his particular desire. Dhruva Maharaj was strongly determined to fulfill his desire. It was for this purpose that he had left home and palace. So are there any questions? And again, thank you for still waiting online, even though I came late. I really appreciate that. Anybody?
Hare Krishna Maharaj.
Okay, yeah,
Haribo. Obeisance, please. Banan and Surit.
Haribo. Anybody like to ask questions?
Yes, please.
Okay.
When you were trying to reconcile the apparent contradiction that we cannot transcend our natures, become, you know, go from a sudra or jatra to brahmanas, yet Prabhupada was trying to make us brahmanas. I didn't really understand the reconciliation.
I'm not sure how it's reconciled, because in the purport it says that, you know, the spirit, and Dhruva was such a great devotee, that, you know, he couldn't transcend that spirit. But the only reconciliation I can is that we're not trained in a particular spirit. And we're mostly what we're called is Vana Sankar. We're a mixture of so many, so many things. So, you know, somehow or other, Prabhupada wanted to bring out that side. But, I mean, even in the Hare Krishna movement, I think it's Prabhupada's faith that a Vaishnava is higher than a Brahmin. But I'm not sure how much that transferred into the occupation. People still, you know, I guess, yeah, really, if people, I see it. You know, Prabhupada was so powerful, he wanted people to fully surrender to Krishna, and you fully surrender to Krishna. There's a certain transcendence that comes. And if someone's really a Vaishnava, he can have a certain role as a Brahmin by his qualities. We see certain saints, I've seen even in the Hare Krishna movement. You know, they may be very, very simple people. They're certainly not classic Brahmins that can sit down and, you know, just chant all day or read or study like that, perform that occupation. But they just became so surrendered that there's a certain position of Brahmin that they can take, because they have realization. They may not be able to quote all the verses. They may not write books. They may be able to sit down and study. They may not be able to do great classes. But they had realization of the absolute truth. And because they had realization of the absolute truth, there's a certain guidance they could give to society. I'm thinking of people like that right now, that they're not maybe intellectual, or they're not necessarily, you know, by nature a person, the mode of goodness. But because they're so surrendered to Krishna and so surrendered to Guru, that there's a certain transcendence and there's a certain realization. And I think that was Prabhupada's hope.
By transcendence, you mean overcoming their material nature?
Well, to a certain extent. At least that, you know, that they were regulated, they were austere, they had a lot of vermicul, shamo, damas, they were peaceful, tolerant, shamo, damas, depo. They were austere, shautam, archivam, honest, gyanam, vigyanam, astikam, religious. They just may not have had the level of knowledge or like that in one sense. Occupationally, you wouldn't see them as a teacher, or occupationally, you wouldn't see them as a, you know, like a priest or something like that, occupationally. But they seem, because you see, I think in the Gita it says that a Brahmin works by certain qualities. It doesn't mention his occupation. So I could see that people develop brahminical qualities when they become a devotee. But they may naturally, but they may not be able to really perform that occupation fully. But Prabhupada felt that if he could have surrendered people, they would create a certain, you know, knowledge, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I give you an example, you know, like, you know, and that, you know, Bali in Gitanagari, you never see him, like, you don't think he'd be give a class, you know, or sit down and be a teacher or something like that. But he's just so pure and bhakti-oriented that the realizations he has are so deep. So in that sense, Prabhupada was just hoping that people that would become surrendered and spiritual, they would hear and they would get realization, they'd be able to guide people, even if it wasn't their occupational nature.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay.
Am I out of time?
No, you deserve one more question.
Thank you. Yeah, it was just something, I don't know, maybe I misheard you, but in the very beginning of the class, you were describing the qualities of a sannyasi. And see, you were talking about, stability. And what happens when he goes around preaching. But it sounded like you had said that for a sannyasi, you take away stability, or you're supposed to take away stability.
Well, I'm just saying, stability means organizing your environment. The sannyasi doesn't do that. He just travels.
Mm-hmm.
The classical sannyasi travels and preaches, and they're in different places at different times, and they're brahminical. They're just teaching, and they're dependent on Krishna completely. But what I was noting, and I'm just saying in terms of my own personal situation, it was a realization, but I see it for others, that it's also a position of leadership, which requires sometimes to organize things managerially, and also for preaching to organize things managerially. So it requires a certain control of the environment that maybe a classic sannyasi wouldn't need.
Mm-hmm.
And I was just reflecting because I'm seeing, because when I've come back this year, my schedule, I'm very organized and fixed. But because something that was supposed to be in place is not there and it keeps on changing, although I expect it, I see how much it throws me off. And honestly, it's one of the reasons why the last two classes I'm missing, because my schedule has completely changed. And I see how personally it has an effect on me. So it was a personal realization, but reflected philosophically that, because I was meditating on that, the classic sannyasi, he's not affected by the environment at all because he doesn't have to control it at all.
Mm-hmm.
He doesn't require it at all for his service.
Mm-hmm.
But the modern person may.
Yeah.
Okay. Yep.
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. Nanan Sri, Hare Krishna, I heard that you're here. Anybody else like to say hello or ask a question?
Hare Krishna Maharaj, that was a very nice class.
Thanks for waiting, Henry, as always. Thank you. Hare Krishna. Anybody else?
Hare Krishna Maharaj.
Okay, the faithfuls are on, so I feel relieved. Yeah, okay, thank you. Hare Krishna. Anybody else?
Hare Krishna Maharaj, this is Kishore.
And Priya.
Priya and Kishore, I missed you yesterday so much.
Yeah.
We missed you too. Priya was crying. Missed you.
Will they at least save you those wonderful calzones and
they saved us
balls? And what's that Italian soup called?
Pasta fagioli, I think.
Pasta fagioli or whatever it is, and you got that,
yes.
The salad, and
in the
you
tiramisu.
Got that cake.
The tiramisu cake, we got that also.
Yeah, I'm telling you, people that are listening in New Jersey, it's all gourmet. Yeah, that was pretty good too, right?
Yeah,
so nice.
It was all very...
Every program, it's like an opulence. They send some exotic thing. There's people that are coming that, what's the name of their bakery?
The Cinnamon Snail.
Cinnamon Snail. And it's in Manhattan too?
Yeah, they have a food truck. And there's one in the Penn Station. I believe they have a restaurant in Penn Station.
Yeah, so the people that are listening, they send us gourmet stuff, and they come for all the programs in New Jersey.
Yes, so, they're very enthusiastic.
But it was very pleasant, too, you know, because it was 11 to 1, and then the weather was beautiful. Lakshmi came, Lakshmi Nisringa, with his family, too.
Very nice. Are you planning another one?
I'll have to coordinate it, because my schedule's up in the air. Normally, I'd have it all planned. That's what's so disturbing for me now.
Mm-hmm.
My schedule is generally so planned. But now it's I don't know this, that, whatever. Okay, I'll figure it out. I definitely would like to, and it'd be great. Okay.
Yeah, we'd love to have Hare Krishna.
Okay, Hare Bol. Anybody else like to say hello? Okay, then I'll go for today. Thank you all a bunch of questions.